This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
For hundreds of years, anthropologists have studied the social relationships of human beings, and none have been more confounding than what they call the different strokes effect.
Get it?
Meet Jade Gulliver, a charmingly low-maintenance, amicable sci-fi fan and avid podcaster. And David Lim, a top model strutting, goldfish-loving, walking jukebox. So, can you handle the difference? Get ready for Different Strokes.
Because it takes different strokes to move the world. Yes, it does. It takes different strokes to move the world.
This is Different Strokes on Joy 94.9 with Jade and Dave. At the top of the show, we played Sleigh Bells, Rill Rill. Dave, it's fair to say this time last week I was doing some pretty bad ignoring of you and your segments because I was too busy trying to watch the opening of Glee.
My
season
goodness.
Two.
Do we have to do this every week
but
for the rest of the
no,
season?
But not normally I would, but tonight, right, is the Britney episode.
Which you don't care about?
I'm into the Britney episode. It's a trending topic on Twitter. You know, anything that's a trending topic on Twitter, I'm all about. Because that's how I like basically plan my life, is what's everyone on Twitter doing?
Yeah, let's just follow the crowd.
Yeah.
So everyone is talking about the Britney/Britney
yes.
episode of Glee right now. It's yeah. probably, you know, the fangirling has probably well and truly gotten on the way already.
Yeah.
I've seen a couple of snaps because... Well, hang on. I don't follow Britney Spears on Twitter.
Yeah.
But I've seen pictures that she's twit-picked, you know, yeah. from the set and everything. And, you know, there are tributes to a couple of my favorite Britney songs, Stronger, Toxic,
yes.
Me Against the Music, mm-hmm. and of course, Baby One More Time.
Yes.
But, you know, the general response, and I don't want to spoil this for you, Jade, but
yes.
the general response from the Twitter crowd is that Britney is not really doing the role justice.
So Britney isn't? Or
as
Britney?
In the Britney, as in... You know, legendary Britney Spears.
Yes, he's not.
She gets, what, one or two lines, I think. She doesn't really have a big part.
It's an obligatory, like, hey, it's the real Britney.
Yeah, and look at me. I'm pressed up against the other Britney.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what's going on there.
See, the other Britney has, like, a really big lesbian following because she's kind of hinted at different times that she might, in fact, be gay.
Oh, really?
Yes. So she kind of has this lesbian following, and you know, our good friend Heather Hogan has, in fact, sent me pictures of her looking hot. Like that was like of of Britney from Glee looking hot. Like that was part of our bonding process.
Oh my goodness! You know, you not only just name dropped,
yeah,
but you managed to, you know, convince us that you're perving on some chick from Glee. That there's so much wrong about that, Jade. I think that fundamentally challenges everything you stand for.
It really does.
Different Strokes flashback, bringing pop culture back from the yesteryears.
This is Different Strokes on Joy 94.9 with Jade and Dave. Dave, I've got to say that Ace of Base song, so 1993 or whenever that, you know, All That She Wants, blah, blah, blah.
It was around that period of time, 93, 94, and it's like they never left.
No,
hey?
It's, you know, they're still kind of, I kind of respect them for still coming out with the same style of music. They haven't tried to move with what's happening today at all.
No, the thing is that it is Ace of Base, but it still sounds current. Like it could work in 2010.
And how do you do that? Is that like a balancing act?
It really is a balancing act. And you're asking me like I'm producing the album.
Oh, well, I don't know. It just seems like an apt discussion to have before we talk about mixed tapes, just because you could really
1990s.
Put... Because you could yeah. put like, you know, 1990s Ace of Base next to 2010 Ace of Base and see what happens, right?
Just have like a whole Ace of Base mixtape, full stop.
Yeah.
That would just be fun. So, Jay, tell me, what was on your mixtape back in ye old days?
Well, see, I've had some interesting days with mixtape. And I guess the thing about the mixtape, right, is I to this very day, I have mixtapes in my car that I made when I was younger, right? And every so often I love to, like, plug them in and just see what I was into, because they're such a, like, for me, they're a window into where I was at a particular moment in my life. Like, you can, you know, of course, I was a teenager during the grunge years. So, and there was, you know, so I've got, like, the grunge style tapes, and then you've got, like, I've totally got Roxette on some of my mixtapes.
Roxette.
Yeah. And, you know, all of that kind of 80s popish, early 90s popish stuff.
Awesome.
And then,
any Blondie?
I don't have Blondie.
Maybe Blondie was too 80s for you.
Maybe.
Yeah, like you were progressing to 90s rock, like Nirvana.
I didn't have any Nirvana, but there was any of that kind of stuff that was around that time is definitely on my mixtape. I grew up in the outer suburbs. There was no choice. You had to, like, that's totally a mixtape.
Grunge
of
and bogan rock.
Exactly. Was all there was available at backyard parties in my day. Just make me feel old. So, you know, I didn't really have a choice. And it, you know what would be really interesting, Dave, to see what would be the difference between my mixtapes and your mixtapes?
My mixtapes? Okay, can I just say, I don't do mixtapes anymore for myself, but as recent as 2003 or 2004, I was making mixtapes for Mama Lim's car.
Yeah.
So I was taking lots of requests for what she wants dubbed on her mixed cassette tape. I had one of those little girly stereos that has a top deck for the CD.
Yeah.
And you could actually record whatever song was playing on the CD onto your cassette. So I was getting lots of requests for big ballads, Celine Dion ballads, maybe.
Yeah, her mum's a big Celine fan.
Mama Lim is a big Celine fan. And, you know, every now and then she would surprise me and go, oh, I like Say You'll Be There by the Spice Girls, or I like Goodbye by the Spice Girls.
See, my mum is notorious for her mishmash taste in music.
I've heard.
Yeah, so she, you know, she's got stuff like Neo, but then she's got, you know, Ronan Keating in the same.
Every mum has Ronan Keating.
Yeah, in the same playlist. So I remember making, you know, those kinds of tapes for my mum too. Same deal, you know, put the CD player in the top, you hit, you know, play on record on your little tape deck, and spending hours upon hours, like, picking and choosing songs.
And making sure you don't tape over the end of the other song. That was the challenge. Now, with Mama Lim, though, because she does not like rewinding, get this, why don't you just buy a CD player? That way you don't have to.
Yeah.
But because she's not a fan of rewinding, what she did was she told me to record the same song twice, back to back. So there are some songs that she specified, I want to have this recorded back to back.
So straight away.
Straight away. Like, she already knew which one she'll be fangirling all over. Like, My Heart Will Go On was at least three times.
Yeah.
So when I would get in a car and she would send me to school and I knew My Heart Will Go On was coming on, I thought, there is no way in hell I'm going to hear anything else for the next 15 minutes. It's Celine all the way, baby. And I pray to God that it is the last of the three. I really do. But, you know, over the years, she's gotten a CD player, and since I've been making her mix CDs.
Yeah.
Now, she has a thing about ballads. She loves ballads. She doesn't like anything up-tempo or anything too distracting, as she would call it.
Yeah.
So one day, just to shake it up, I put on Tina Turner's Proud Mary on track one of the CD, just like, bam, you know, really wake you up.
Yeah.
And she didn't complain. So as the months went by, I started to put more rocky or more up-tempo stuff on there just to see how far my mum would go.
Yeah.
But she drew the line at Lady Gaga.
Really?
Yeah.
Which lady?
Telephone.
Telephone?
You know, I can imagine a song like Telephone being so heavy on the bass and the synths and everything. That's got to give Mama Lim a bit of a migraine.
Yeah.
So she doesn't cope very well with that level of noise.
You haven't thought about starting, you know, trying Just Dance or, you know?
No, I think I put some Gaga ballads on, like from the Fame album. But, you know, Mum's very set in her ways, you know, so you have to take it easy with her. But what I wanted to say about mixtapes as well, Jade, is that it's, actually, you know, despite you and I spouting here about the old days, a lot of people still do it these days. Like in the hip hop community, they cut regular mixtapes, and it's got a real flavor to it that I think you and I seem to be missing.
Yeah, well, I guess it kind of leads into the discussion about, you know, now that everyone you can still, you know, effectively make your own mixtape on an on your MP3 players with playlists and all of that. But it just seems a bit more disposable. Even with CDs, it was, you know, with the difference between CDs and tape, like when you're on tape, it just seemed a lot easier to put together a mixed tape than it is to put together a CD.
Do you sequence your songs? That's what I wanted to know.
Do I sequence my songs?
I do. I make sure that one song flows into another. I don't do any kind of DJing trickery.
No.
I just made sure that the tracks naturally sound cohesive next to each other.
I wouldn't necessarily do that. I would just more go for, these are all of the songs that I would like to listen to.
In no particular order, you just whack them in?
Not necessarily whack them in. I'll kind of, you know, I'm not as thoughtful about my music choices. Haven't we established that by now?
Oh, I don't know, Jade. You know, you surprise me every now and then.
Yeah.
But yeah. Look, we've got an SMS here from someone who did not put their name in. But that's okay, Anonymous. We still love you.
Yeah.
The message reads, OMG, mixtape. I did that a lot in college. Still got my favorites with me. Backstreet Boys, got some cool tracks together. C, I haven't heard of that band, C. C-double-I.
Oh, no, I think they're saying their name is C.
Oh, I am so sorry. Look at me, like, trying to do two things at once. Like,
thanks, C, for letting us know.
Thank you, C. Yeah, and I thought you were anonymous. That's okay. This is what happens when I open
Did
my mouth without before
Backstreet
reading.
Boys? Was Mama Lim into Backstreet Boys? Because Mama Gulliver is totally into Backstreet Boys.
How much time do we have? Because Papa Lim loves Backstreet Boys. Because we got a whole different type of mixtape we can talk about now.
Yeah.
Says, Papa Lim loved Backstreet Boys and what else did he have on it? The Bee Gees.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Staying Alive.
My
everything.
Papa Gulliver, totally like all hard rock.
Hard rock.
Or hard rock or grunge rock, like, you know, Pearl Jam, or like he likes old school stuff.
Okay.
Like anything that was like Ozzy Osbourne or anything like that. But yeah, Mum, totally what's on the radio and the weirdest selection ever. Like,
I love your mum's selection.
Yeah.
We got another text here from James saying, hey guys, great show so far. Jade, you read the rest
Mixtapes, I have a box of them in the shed. It was a task to rush to the record button when a song I wanted to come on. So we haven't talked much about that culture because technically it's illegal.
Oh, come on, Jade. Everyone did it.
Part of the culture was, you know, you have your blank tape ready to go and when your song comes on the radio, it's like, record.
I know. And I used to hate it when DJs would talk before the track. And now I do it.
Yeah, and the thing...
Suck on that.
Exactly. And that's like one of the first things you're taught is, you know, how to make sure you fade into the tracks properly and you don't leave just all this music space. So it's quite funny that now we're just like, yeah, we're going to talk through those tracks.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I feel sorry for, well, I don't know who out there will be recording stuff, recording songs of our show. But
I'm sure there's someone out there that's got like this whole stack of Different Strokes mixtapes, and what a weird collection that would be.
Yeah, because, you know, what we do on the show is, as you probably realise, we play an indie track, then a pop track, and you get this queen, you know, trying to back announce or talk at the start of the song.
How be like, this is brand new Ace of Base.
Get ready for a Different Strokes take on music. Scott Spark, welcome to Joy 94.9. How are you today?
Great. We just finished the Washington tour last week, and you know, we started in Fremantle at the end of August, and we just finished up in Melbourne, and it felt like it ended up being like this residency in Melbourne, actually, because there were five corner hotel shows.
And I heard it was a record-breaking number for Washington.
Well, record-breaking number for the corner hotel. Like, they've
for
never
any
had...
acts, yeah.
Yeah, so that was phenomenal, and it felt like a bit of a home in the end.
You're a regular Victorian now. You're one of us.
Totally. Well, it's in my blood. It's in my dad's side, actually, so they grew up in the back lots of, you know...
Some parts Melbourne. Of Victoria, Melbourne.
Melbourne. So I feel like I'm getting back to my roots, you know, that's what I'm doing here.
Excellent. So in any case, you first sauntered on the scene, I think, last December with your EP, Kathleen.
Mm, yeah.
And now you've launched your debut album, Fail Like You Mean It.
Mm-hmm.
So take me on this journey. Take me from the moment you decided, okay, I'm going to be a recording artist and I'm going to make an album. So tell me how you got to that point.
Well, you know, I I always played music ever since I was a tot, you know. Mm-hmm. My parents didn't play themselves, but they were, you know, devotees of, like, I couldn't escape in the house Led Zeppelin on my from my dad and, like, a Neil Young. And for my mum, it was very much like Van Morrison and musicals. She was just like a, you know, a bit of a freak when it came to taking me to every single possible musical, for better or worse. You know, I think I've seen John English in every single production that he's ever been in. You know, we had some kind of crappy organ piano slash thing in the living room when I was like two or three. And I literally, at about the age of three, just climbed up and started plinking and mucking around. And it all went from there, really. At around sort of teenage years, well, probably about 12 or so, I just started becoming very attuned into the radio and listening to lots of radio. And all of a sudden, I went from being this really studious kind of piano player where I'd finish the songs and it'd be all sort of very satisfying. And then I just became very distracted. I couldn't for the life of me get through a piece because I wanted to keep changing it, whether it was the intro or, you know, I think this middle section would sound better if they did this. Sorry, Debussy. I started off by writing just really sprawling, unedited instrumental pieces. And I think if I kept going down that path, I mean, it's a great thing to do, but it's not my world. I have no concept of where I would have ended up.
There's so much in the title, Fail Like You Mean It. Can you tell us a bit about it?
Fail Like You Mean It was the first song that I wrote. Mm-hmm. after my dad died. And it was kind of, I was thinking a lot, like, yeah, it Fail Like You Mean It's kind of all about asking, like, it's asking you, like, what are you made of? And it also comes from this question that I was thinking of, like, when you die, is that like your, is that our ultimate failure to each other? Mm-hmm. Like, I love you, you love me, I die, have I failed you? You know, and that's a really, like, that's a tough question. And it's not a very nice question, but I'm not here to ask nice questions. Like, I'm here to just kind of think and curious. I'm just curious, right? Mm-hmm. Do we fail each other by dying? Like, you know, music, a lot of arts and entertainment is very much based around some element of cool, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think cool has a place. It's one of the ingredients that we feed off. Like, that's fine. That makes sense. I've got no problem with cool. I have a problem with cool being the only ingredient because I think that's kind of boring. Mm-hmm. And I think it's also not very vulnerable. And I think life is so much more interesting when we are vulnerable to each other. And that's kind of, that's when I begin to realize that's what the record was about, you know. Mm-hmm. All of these songs come from that really kind of awkward, clumsy period between being a teenager and trying to kind of grapple with some sense of adulthood, young adulthood or whatever that means. And I think what happens to most of us in that period is that you kind of, you try desperately not to fuck up too much, to fail too much in relationships, career, whatever. Everything changes dramatically. Your relationship with your parents, friends come and go, and you're very exposed.
Because the tracks are very genuine. I mean, there's something very genuine about your delivery. The songs all feel very bittersweet. I mean, I've got a few favourites, like Fail Like You Mean It, Half-Formed Song. I love that one.
That's one of the earlier ones, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
I love that one. The Truth and What Is In A World. There's something about the melody in that one that just, especially the chorus, that just made me go, okay, I need to stop doing what I do. I need to listen to this.
No, that's very kind. I was a bit sort of, that song surprised me because I have such great respect for songwriters that can write political songs. You know, like Paul Kelly just does it very, very well. Like, from Little Things, Big Things Grow, I can't think of a better political song. Like, amazing.
Now, this is going to be really hard because this album feels very personal. I mean, just hearing you talk about it, I can just get a sense of how close this is to you. But if you have to pick a track to say which is closest to your heart, which one would it be?
Can I have a look at the track list here?
No. You should know this off the top of your head. Come on. It's your album.
You know, I think probably Eat Your Heart Out.
I mean, you recorded a live performance of this with a primary school choir. What was that about? That must have been the best gig ever.
Oh, yeah, well...
How did you go about approaching the school?
Well,
here's a song about death.
Yeah, I know. It's a very sensitive thing, right? But I don't like to underestimate kids. I think kids are very smart, you know, and I like to treat them. Obviously, you can't treat them exactly like adults.
You can't overwhelm them, but at the same time, you shouldn't take.
There's got to be a degree of respect, but at the same time, there's like, you're not dumb, you know? And so. I was asking around friends, hey, do you know of a choir that might do this well? Like, I don't want a show choir. I don't want people who've won awards. I just want a cool bunch of kids. Anyways, one of my friends said, oh my God, I've got the best, but like perfect choir. And the choir master is vivacious and loves the kids to death. So I went out near the back of Sunnybank in Brisbane and there was this 100-piece kids choir ranging from the ages of like 8 to 12 or 9 to 12. So I sent the song to the teacher and said, look, you know, this is who I am. I would really love to sing this song with the kids if they want to do it. The reason why I'm doing it is because I've kind of been inspired by these other things. She came back. They were like so enthusiastic. In fact, I was on the phone with her one morning at one of my first conversations. I said, oh, hey, Josephine, how are you doing? You know, and she goes, oh, Scott, I just want to put you on speakerphone for a second. So she put me on speakerphone and all of a sudden I had like 100 kids like yell, hello, Scott, you know, like, and they had been practicing the song and so I went and visited them and I stood there and they were like, they knew every single lyric to the song and they spent like half an hour telling me what they thought of the song and they broke it down into its like molecular constituent elements and they were describing how they like what the lyrics meant to them.
And did that make you feel?
I was
getting
pretty overwhelmed. Back. Like I'd never had someone like dissect a song of mine like that before, especially not 12-year-olds who totally like they were sharp. They knew exactly what they were singing.
Excellent. Okay, what I'll do now is we'll do a quick five with you.
Oh, okay.
Quick five.
Got to brace myself just
a
second.
You know, every single time I've said, oh, let's do a quick five, people get really nervous and they're like, oh, I'm not really good at thinking on my feet. I'm like, honey, there ain't no prize behind that door. Yeah, you can just relax.
Yeah.
So question number one, Mr. Scott Spark.
Yeah, okay.
What is the best thing you've ever bought from an op shop?
Oh, okay. Last time I was in New York, there was a great secondhand like op shop warehouse and I bought like 3 amazing shirts. But I don't wear them anymore because they make me look like I'm in Wilco and I'm not. I love Wilco, but I'm not Wilco. So there you go.
Okay, so question number two. Who is your gay icon? It can be a musical one, can be a political one. Who is your gay icon?
You know what I'm going to go for here? I'm going to say Matthew Mitchum. And the reason why is because I think he, like, I have through the roof respect for that guy. You know, he has done more for young gay dudes and he's just a straight up cool guy, you know, that is like, yeah, I'm gay, get over it. Let's move on. I'm going to dive and I'm going to win lots of awards and China fucking loves me. And I was like, you rock.
Question number three, what was your favorite subject at school?
I'd like biology. You get to cut stuff up. It's kind of a weird, like, and you get to mix chemicals and I liked, no, and yeah, but at university, my favorite subject, and I'm going to sound like indulge me here for a moment. I really liked philosophy and anthropology. I studied, a dual degree in, journalism and arts. And in the arts, I majored in anthropology and philosophy. And there were these anthropology and philosophy, get them in the same room and they are, ill-tempered cousins, you know, like they don't see eye to eye. And I loved the fact that I kind of my life was, you know, had to accommodate these two incredibly ill-fitting parts. I loved it.
Question number four, your TV guilty pleasure. What is it?
Ooh, at the moment it's True Blood and 30 Rock, although I haven't watched 30 Rock in a little while now because it's on hiatus. But yeah, I mean, I'm not a huge TV watcher, to be honest. Like, I don't watch a giant amount of, like, very minuscule, actually. But I would have to say yes. It would be True Blood.
Okay. And finally, question number five. What is a good song to spring clean to?
Bob Marley.
anything Bob Marley.
Yeah, he does. Oh, yep, absolutely. All you need to do to clean the house is need to like have a like a nip of something. And then put on some Bob Marley.
Just before you begin, yeah. Just to take the pain away. Just take the edge off a little from dusting.
Just a little bit of an edge. But don't do it like a mid-morning clean, because I'm not sort of proposing that you have a nip of something too early. But maybe wait till the afternoon, have a nip of something, and then put on some Bob Marley.
And start dusting.
Welcome to Different Strokes Online. Log in to hear Jade and Dave's perspectives on online media.
The internet should not be used as a high-tech babysitter. We need to make sure that when our kids surf the web, they don't drown.
This is Different Strokes on Joy 94.9 with Jade and Dave. Dave, so new Twitter is upon us.
Is it really upon us? Is it for everyone to consume, or is it still in the
testing?
It's
still in the testing phase.
Still in the testing lab,
It is. They haven't been, from what I've been able to see in my research, they have not officially said when it'll happen. They've kind of said, oh, in the next couple of weeks it'll launch. But I guess like the thing for me is, and this is a lot of feedback that I've already started to hear, is effectively that Twitter is massively changing, well, the way they kind of their interface and the way things look. And it's pretty much the first time they've done that, at least in from what I can remember, and I've been on Twitter since 2007. They're changing their interface, and of course we all remember how controversial it was last year when Facebook decided to change all of their interface, their layout. Yep. And I'm already starting to hear that Twitter is actually handling this switchover and promoting this switchover a lot better than Facebook did with theirs.
So they're easing people into it.
People into it. They're kind of letting people know, while everyone doesn't have access to it, they've got, you know, this promotional video, and they've got like this whole page, and they've got, you know, got their hashtag where they're explaining the things that are coming up, or what you can expect from new Twitter.
Because the last thing we'll want is to have some sort of backlash, just like what happened with new Facebook or, you know, MySpace. It's probably what, the Joan Rivers of social networking websites. So many, you know, facelifts and so many, you know, nips and tucks. I don't even recognize MySpace anymore.
Who even has MySpace anymore?
I don't know. Some singers do. So yeah. There's an incentive.
My thing on MySpace is that, you know, it started off for bands, and then everyone got on there, and now all of the everyones have jumped off, which is good, and now it can go back to the bands. I'm kind of okay with that.
You're at peace with that.
Yeah.
So new Twitter, is it really radical to the point where I need to go, somebody run a tutorial on this?
No, it's not.
It's still very user-friendly.
It's very user-friendly, and it's actually the features that they're rolling out actually make it a lot easier to use.
Okay, what are some of the features?
So basically what the setup is, right, they've widened. So at the moment you've got your little feed, right? You've got your little feed that sits in the middle, and then you've got on the right-hand side, you've got that little toolbar that has your little icon and then how many followers you have and all of that. So that's what you've got at the moment. But what happens is in new Twitter, it widens out that right-hand side.
Oh, okay.
And you've got sort of more space happening in that area. And what happens is when you click on a particular tweet, it brings up all of the information within that relates to that tweet. So it'll bring up, so if I was to click on something that you'd tweeted, Dave, it would say, Dave, this is the tweet that Dave had. Below it, here are some people who have mentioned Dave recently.
Oh.
Here's some of the conversations that are going on. You know, Dave has written in response to this. So
all the replies to that particular tweet will also drop down on the right-hand side.
Yeah, and so what happens at the moment with Twitter is when you click onto someone, it navigates away from your page, your home page, and goes to their page. And what basically the key difference is that you will be able to access all of it from the one page. It just extends out that right-hand panel and it loads within the one page. So it's actually a lot more user-friendly because you end up kind of just navigating around the one page instead of sort of flicking through all of them. They've moved all of your at mentions and your retweets and your search and your list up into that into the toolbar next to the timeline. So at the timeline, at the top of the timeline, you have the five tabs. You've got the timeline, the at mentions, the retweets, the searches, and the lists.
So everything is going to be located on your main back page,
exactly.
So to speak.
Yep.
So I think that's really helpful because I find that, and this could be a contributing factor to Twitter mm-hmm. always crashing, is probably because people are going back and forth pages a lot.
Mm.
So if you can have everyone just handling their business
yeah.
from that one back page, you're going to save a lot of clicks.
Yeah,
it's going to be more user-friendly.
Yeah, it is. It's a lot more user-friendly.
But does it look congested, Jade?
It doesn't. They've actually done a really good job. I was impressed. I mean, I don't actually have access to new Twitter, so I've had to go searching around for someone who did.
Oh, okay, so you bootlegged this information.
I totally bootlegged this information. And P.S. Twitter, totally offended. I've been on Twitter since 2007 and you didn't ask me.
Oh, my goodness. Like, OMFG, don't you know who I am?
Yeah, exactly.
You be Twitter queen bee.
The other interesting feature is something that I don't normally have a problem with because I've actually got a phone where I do most of my tweeting and it does it for me. But there's predictive text for your username. So if you at mention someone and you go at, if I'm trying to put in Dave, so I do at D, it'll bring down all of my options for sort of start asking me. So you don't have to remember everyone's username anymore.
Awesome. It's a little bit like what Facebook is doing because you can tag people on
Facebook. Exactly, yeah. So when you do the tagging on Facebook, similar type thing. And one of the other interesting new features is that's kind of Facebooky as well is that you can it's going to be easier to embed videos and photos, and also that you'll be able to play videos straight from the page without navigating away. So that's again another Facebook feature that, you know, at the moment you can play YouTube through Facebook.
Now the magic question
yes.
is of course, Jade, still 140 characters
yes.
per tweet.
Yeah.
Yep. Nothing's changed on that front.
It is a microblog. It will continue to be that.
And I think it should be because if you've got a problem with that, you just need to be more succinct.
Yeah, it's really, what I really like about that whole 140 characters thing is it really forces you to rethink things and rethink them again. And
I know. All my years of writing leads in journalism classes yeah. coming to play on Twitter. I exercise it every minute of the day.
Yes.
In any case, thank you so much for bringing us all the updates there. I feel like we're crossing back to the live newsroom now.
Yes, yeah.
coming up upon the hour, we have Sci-Fi and Squeam here on Joy 94.9. But in the meantime, we're going to play a track by Anne Horse.
Yes.
It's called Camp Out.
Yes, and there may be some swears.
Ooh, geisha hands.
Yeah, so geisha hands now or geisha hands over your ears if you've got problems with that.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.